Happy to welcome to our program Sarah Anderson. She's director of the Institute for Policy Studies Global Economy Project and author of the recent article titled, Supporting NAFTA Was the Kiss of Death for Democrats, Why Dems Should Think Twice About Voting for TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. Sarah, thanks so much for making time to come on the program tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So say a brief word, if you would, about the IPS and Global Economy Project that you're the director of.
Well, the Institute for Policy Studies was founded in Washington, D.C. in 1963, and we're a multi-issue think tank. And I have been working there since the NAFTA debate, really. That was my formative experience here in Washington, doing advocacy and research related to the North American Free Trade Agreement up until the historic vote in November 1993. So I've been having a lot of flashbacks recently in the middle of this big trade debate.
It might be good to review for our listeners what happened in Congress last week, where a companion bill to Fast Track, or something officially known as Trade Promotion Authority legislation, lost a crucial vote in the House of Representatives, potentially derailing President Obama and Republican and corporate supporters of a plan to ratify the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement that would involve 12 nations around the Pacific Rim, involving some 40% of the world's economy. As I understand it, it was a measure to provide financial aid to displaced workers that lost the vote, and that was a strategy, or a tactic, I should say, that was employed by opponents of Fast Track and TPP.
Right. Well, Scott, I will do my best to explain this situation or to improve on what you just said, but I have to say, in my more than 20 plus years here in Washington, D.C., I don't know if I've ever seen such a complicated legislative situation. I think that the main message I want to put out first is that this was truly a historic day last Friday, because this was a fight that really united broad swaths of the progressive movement. Almost all the unions were there, but not just unions. It was also environmental, faith, immigrant, food safety, you know, NAACP. There was really a broad coming together in opposition to this whole trade package, up against the Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, the Wall Street lobby groups. And so the fact that it's just stalled alone is a really big deal. And it was painful to watch a Democratic president fight so hard on an issue on the opposite side of most of his constituents. But I'm hoping that it'll be a real wake-up call, and that they'll, you know, think that they need to take a different approach to trade. But, you know, down to the minutia of, you know, the legislative maneuvering, like you said, there was a vote in the House. This had already passed through the Senate as one unified bill, but they broke it up into several pieces on the House side, with the understanding that if any of those pieces failed, the whole package would go down. And so the first vote was on the worker assistance for workers who lose their jobs as a result of trade. Democrats usually renew this without any real controversy, but this time it went down big time, more than 300 votes against it. That meant that the big issue of the day, this fast-track authority, which is what the administration wants to grease the wheels to get new trade agreements through Congress, that would fail as well. But to show momentum, the Republicans did bring it up, and they got a majority in favor of it, but it was still purely symbolic because of the defeat of the worker training funds during that first vote. So I hope I made some sense there, but I'm telling you, it was high drama and it was extremely complicated.
What's the next step for opponents here? Has it really come down to a second vote that I've read is being scheduled to retry that displaced workers fund measure that didn't pass the first time out?
Very confusing what will happen from here on out. They are talking about bringing that back up. How they think they can switch something like 80 votes within a short period of a matter of a few days, I can't imagine. But for the opponents, it's continued pressure on, especially on Democrats who voted for the fast track piece of the legislation on Friday. You've got one there in Connecticut. Representative Jim Hines was one of the 28 Democrats that did vote for that. And so these are the people who are really going to be, you know, on the target list of a lot of the groups that are opposing this legislation. And it's gotten very intense. I just don't know if I've ever seen anything like this, where you have the labor movement threatening to, you know, really try to scuttle the reelection bids of Democrats who are voting for this. So it's really become the most intense legislative fight I can see I've seen on these issues ever.
What's at stake in your view in terms of if Fast Track passes and the Trans-Pacific Partnership down the road also receives passage from Congress, what is it that you and many of the other opponents are most concerned about?
Well, the way I'm seeing it, I feel like the intensity around this vote is not just about Fast Track. It's not just about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's about the whole trade agenda and beyond. I think what we're seeing, the intensity of this, is a reflection of kind of the current zeitgeist. People are so much more sensitive these days to issues around inequality, to feeling like the rules of the economy have been rigged in favor of the 1%. I think a lot of that is coming out, is being unleashed in this debate. But what it will do if we do get this new Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a trade pact among 12 countries, with the largest being Japan, and some smaller countries like Vietnam, is a continuation of an approach to the global trade rules that really leads to a race to the bottom. I mean, I wish so badly I could believe the rhetoric coming out of the Obama administration right now about how this is going to be good for workers and worker rights and democracy. I don't think the workers in Vietnam or the people under forced labor in Malaysia are going to gain anything out of this. There's no enforceable labor rights in the package. And so it's just going to be continued pitting workers and communities against each other as these big global corporations take advantage of the protections they get under these agreements to push down labor and environmental standards.
Sarah Anderson, one of the tactics that's been adopted by proponents of Fast Track and the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement is that they're now saying this is really a matter of national security, that if the United States doesn't lead on trade in Asia, that China will fill that vacuum, creating some kind of economic, and I think there's also an inference of a military threat to the United States. What's your response to this sort of tactic to really make China the bogeyman here in terms of if we don't do Fast Track and the TPP, somehow national security is going to be at stake?
Well, it shows how desperate they are, and this is not a brand new argument. I remember right after the 9/11 tragedy, they were saying that we needed to expand trade because otherwise it would help, you know, the terrorists. So this is an argument they like to trot out when they're really desperate to get momentum behind their agenda. I think if we really want to distinguish ourselves from China, if we want to make, you know, the line we've heard over and over again is, if we're not writing the rules, China will write the rules. So why aren't we out there with rules that are, that distinguish ourselves from China, that are pro-worker, pro-environment, pro-democracy? That would be something I could get behind, a real positive agenda. But that's not what we're seeing here. So it's an argument that I think really falls flat.
We're speaking with Sarah Anderson this evening. She's director of the Institute for Policy Studies Global Economy Project, and we're talking about last week's unexpected and surprising vote for many progressive constituencies around the country, and that President Obama's big push to get fast-track legislation through the House failed, at least for the moment. There may be a new vote this week, but these groups in labor and environmental organizations are rallying to try and derail this thing if it does come up for a second vote. Sarah, at the bottom line, maybe you could say a word about what's at stake in this trade, this push for free trade agreements in terms of pushing up corporate power at the expense of democracy and citizens' control over their own lives. Because, as we understand it, the Trans-Pacific Partnership really gives corporations an opportunity to launch lawsuits against local, state, and national governments if they create regulations that impinge on corporate profits.
That's exactly right. Under these trade agreements, and we already know that this is in the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because there was a leak of the investment chapter. So we know that they are intending through this to give corporations in these other countries the right to sue the U.S. government over actions that they claim affect the value of their investments. And so we've already seen this under NAFTA. The U.S. government has been sued multiple times by Canadian companies over things like environmental laws in the state of California. And we're likely to see a lot more of these kinds of cases when we're dealing with countries like Japan that have substantial investment here in the United States. And it really is outrageous. You know, one thing I've been frustrated by in this debate is that they keep saying that if you're opposed to this, you're anti-trade. Well, there's not much in this deal that's really about the old-fashioned trade in goods across borders. It's mostly about things like giving private foreign investors the right to sue over public interest regulations, the increased powers to pharmaceutical companies to protect their patents and make it more difficult to provide generic medicines to people who need it. It's more about these kinds of corporate powers and rights than it has anything to do with goods crossing borders.
Well, Sarah, just a final question. Lately, there's been some discussion about, as you said, opponents of Fast Track and the Trans-Pacific Partnership are somehow anti-trade, which is a kind of a totally misdirection in terms of why people are opposed to it. Generally speaking, though, how has the corporate media coverage been of these issues? I've been disturbed by really any kind of lack of explanation as to why opponents are rallying to stop this trade bill.
That is the case, and you know, in a way, just dealing with what happened Friday, I have a little sympathy in how difficult it is to cover such a complicated debate. But you're right, getting at the core issues. I have seen some improvement on this whole issue of investors having the right to sue governments. Boy, that has been a really tough one to get any media coverage of over the years. But we have seen a bit of an improvement. Senator Warren had a great piece in the Washington Post, and that kind of broke things open there, but yeah, we're still seeing it characterized as about trade. Caroline Kennedy, JFK's daughter, had a piece in Politico about how her father was a free trader, and so we should all be free traders. And, you know, back in John F. Kennedy's day, it was about trade going across borders. It was about eliminating tariff barriers. It's not the same model today. Today, it's about deregulation and giving investors and corporations more power.
Well, Sarah, we're out of time, but I wondered if you would leave our listeners with some of the websites that are coordinating actions and providing information and analysis of Fast Track and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, as well as the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership that we didn't even get to talk about tonight. But that's also waiting in the wings for passage if this Fast Track legislation passes.
Yeah, well, a good reference source would be the Citizens Trade Campaign, which has pulled together a lot of these different diverse groups in opposition to these trade pacts. I don't have their website address right in front of me, but if you Google Citizens Trade Campaign, you should be able to find that. Some of the other really active groups would include the AFL-CIO, the Sierra Club, Friends of the Earth. So, yeah, there are a lot of resources out there.
And Public Citizens Trade Watch is also part of a coalition,
exactly.
Too. Right. Well, Sarah, thanks so much for explaining a lot of these issues that are really coming to a head in the next few days. I hope listeners will tune in and take action if they feel so moved. But appreciate all your work trying to make sense of this. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Okay. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's Sarah Anderson, Director of the Institute for Policy Studies Global Economy Project.